You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
You know, when you were a kid, and maybe it's just me, but it was always harder when your mom was disappointed in you than when she was mad at you. I'm very disappointed in you, Brian, because you knew better. That hurt. Well, I got to tell you, I'm not mad at the Columbus Crew, but I'm very disappointed in them. We'll see how you guys feel. Welcome to the Mass Report Podcast. That's Brett back from Connecticut with pizza ideas galore. And
that's a different podcast, but we can turn that into
taking
it.
Notes. Yeah, we may have to do a Mass Report pizza pod. Murph is here. Bart will be here later. Sam is behind the controls enjoying a salad here at Saucy Brew Works. I'm enjoying the electric lettuce again. I think this is my new favorite here at Saucy Brew Works. Anybody else enjoying multigrain?
I've done nothing but be on the sauce for the last week, so we're off it for... We're taking a little bit of a
all
break.
Right. Well, that's fine. I got coffee.
But yeah, I'm a
really
Noche Tropical. Here at Saucy Brew Works. Speaking of pizza, by the way, Saucy Brew Works, fabulous pizza.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can't go wrong here. You eat, you drink, you have an injection of caffeine. It's all right here at 3rd Michigan in Harrison West. And do what we do. Just hang out here at least once a week. And we thank them again for having us. Brett, I don't think that we can address anything else about this game the other night until we address the cavalcade of terrible touches I saw by your Columbus Crew in the second half the other night. I thought that they were unbelievably sloppy with the ball, and heavy touches and passes to bad places and just really basic stuff that left me just disappointed, as I said.
When you're terrified of turning the ball over, usually that happens. When you feel like you have less time on the ball than you maybe normally do, which is exactly the blueprint of Red Bull pressing soccer, that's exactly the reaction that you're attempting to that they're attempting to get and that they got from the Columbus Crew. And then the fact that borderline blatant arrogant refusal from the black and gold to play the ball long at times and to continuously repeatedly try and redefine the definition of insanity by playing out of the back against that Red Bull press, and they were punished for it, and not just to the tune of a 2-1 defeat. It probably should have been more than that.
It should have been.
Imagine
if the Red Bulls would have started a lot of their good players, because apparently all their best players were on the bench, and they just open the floodgates and go, all right, guys, get out there and save it for us, because they hadn't been scoring at all.
Yeah,
in the first half, they looked pretty lost. They changed tactics, they changed players, and it was like looking at a different team.
Well, I also think that if you kind of look across all the punditry of Major League Soccer, a lot of them, I won't say like the majority, but a lot of them are pretty high on this Red Bulls team in terms of where they're going to finish in the Eastern Conference this year. And I would count myself among that group. I do think that a lot of it depends on Lewis Morgan and his finishing ability at times. And he definitely did that a handful of opportunities last year. But with what they try to do and how uncomfortable they make you, you see teams that like normally never really look like they play bad soccer. More often than not, when they do play Red Bulls, they play terrible soccer. The game's just ugly. And the Crew of this game, I thought, very much played up to that. It was just an all-around flat, bad performance. And honestly, they're a catastrophic goalkeeping boner move from being wholeheartedly shut out in that game as well.
Look, this is the second game in four where I look back, and it's easy for us, hindsight being 2020, to look back, but I just don't get what Wilfried Nancy's trying to do tactically in this game and in the Philly game. Like, in my mind, if you want to try and play your style against a team like Red Bull, you can't have so many young guys, especially on the back line. Philip Quinton can't be out there trying to possess the ball. Will Sands can't be, not when you have other options, and they now have other options. Jimmy Madranda, he may not be 90 minutes fit, but he would have been better than Will Sands for 60 minutes. Philip Quinton, who actually played fine defensively other than the two goals that he didn't defend on, he's not a guy who possesses the, that's not what he's done. That's not what center backs do growing up in United States soccer and coming through, you know, the college system for the most part. And I mean, even Darlington Nagbe, because he didn't have a ton of options around him that he looked like he trusted, wasn't getting the ball out of his feet. He was turning it over a lot. You didn't have an outlet up top in any form of an actual striker because Cucho Hernandez wasn't out there, and not that he is your typical target guy. So they didn't play long except for the one time that they got the goal, maybe a couple other times. But it just, the approach, and Nancy said last week when I asked him about playing Red Bull, you know, we're going to play our game. And you know, Greg Berhalter and Caleb Porter were both pretty stubborn about the way they wanted to play. But they both learned at points that when you play Red Bull, you've got to make adjustments to that style point. Now, this is a regular season game. It's 4 weeks in the season. Maybe if this is the MLS Cup playoffs at the end of the year, Nancy does some things differently. But I was just, I don't know. I think there's too much naivete right now with some of the guys on the field and trying to play this way in these situations where, oh, look, they'll learn from this, and this will be a good thing down the road. And as we've mentioned, this is going to be a process with this team. And I mean, results matter, but they don't seem to matter as much this year as they did last year for some strange reason. But, you know, there may be bumps in the road like this where you look back and you're like, why did you do this? And why did we lose the game when we could have just done something different? And it's because he wants this team to play this way, ultimately. Mm-hmm. I just thought, you know, you could have managed things a little bit better tactically.
Brett, at halftime, you're in the Red Bulls locker room, and obviously they made a lot of changes tactically with personnel as well. What if you're their manager, what are you seeing in Columbus Crew that leads you to the decisions? And obviously they were the right decisions, but what, through their eyes, did they see in us that said, okay, this is the path forward?
A back line that can't possess the ball would have been the first thing identified. And then specifically wingbacks, who I think were, I hate using the word or the phrase turnover prone, because I think that's a little bit unfair against Red Bulls, because like everybody is turnover prone against them. So it's not necessarily indicative of like a pattern. It's just the way the game is. But I mean, the both goals are the result of essentially like, I've got no other option, so I'm punting the ball. That's an immediate turnover, second ball win, back out the other way, and like, well, they like have no other option, right? And so under pressure, definitely feeling. I also think the fatigue that comes with being pressed out your mind for the better part of 90 minutes. That you're just like kind of hitting a ball and praying. The second goal is especially that with, yeah, Mo Farsi, right? And then the fact that it's John Tolkien floating a nothing ball that nobody even like can checks a shoulder to see who's back there. Like that's like one of the softest goals I've seen the Columbus Crew give up in the last few years.
The closest one to that goal was Mataranda.
Yeah.
Which was like, he looked like he didn't even know where that ball was.
And one of the things that I've always thought with Red Bulls that you have to be comfortable with is because the way the pressing works, teams have a tendency to become a little bit more narrow because, yeah, you want someone just closer to you, because that proximity, the closer you are, maybe makes me feel a little bit better when I'm under pressure, if I have you as an outlet, right? And when teams essentially lose that width, the Red Bulls like lick their chops, because they are extremely comfortable with the ball being wide and understanding how some of that space works. And especially in the second half, the Crew is just so narrow. And then add in on top of that, just like this refusal to kind of understand what I didn't really think was like an altogether like tactically genius move. It was pretty straightforward as far as I was concerned. Be like, okay, they're doing this. Let them have the ball. If you look at the way Philadelphia plays when they play Red Bulls, Jim Curtin gives them the ball for 70% of the time and says, all right, break us down.
Because they don't want it.
Right. It was like, well, we're okay without the ball. Red Bulls doesn't want the ball.
Yeah.
We'll take 0-0 in Harrison. Thanks. Everyone should take that. And instead it was like, we're going to try and tiki-taka Barcelona Pep Guardiola you. And it's like, goodness gracious, that's just not – no one has been able to do that in Major League Soccer against this team for like 15 years. It was baffling at times. Baffling.
And you saw it more in the second half when they right. started to sit back and not press as high. And you're like, okay, they're sitting because they're going to press on the counter. And that's exactly what they did, and that's how they got both of those goals. They utilized mistakes. They were faster to get back to our side of the field, and they scored. And I want to say something about all the people that are saying that Eloy Room is bad. He got victimized by his defense.
He didn't have a chance.
If it wasn't for several leg saves that he had, this could have been a significant, four or five goal deficit.
He made the save on the first one. You know, you can't just...
Which, really, that one's not his fault.
No,
right, right?
No. I mean, there's nothing... You can't get up quicker than he did to try and recover the... You know, and maybe you can argue he parries it further wide, but, like, nothing... I don't know why Crew fans have this beef with Eloy Room other than some of the things he posts on social media that they disagree with, I guess, but... The guy is a good goalkeeper. I just don't understand.
And on the second goal, he was misdirected. Like, the fact that he got a foot to it, he was going the opposite direction. So he had no control on where that rebound was going to go.
The second goal is a wide-open man at the back post because there's no communication between the back.
Sorry, on the first goal. My bad.
On the first goal, he made a save, and then there's a easy rebound. I mean, I think anyone who's played soccer at a moderately decent level finishes that ball. Like, it's an open net.
Well, I would have missed it, but
I disagree.
My intent would have been the right one.
I think you cool as you like to steal a phrase from the British.
I would have needed a couple of touches, and I would have got those touches because I had so much space.
Which I think is that essentially that proves the point, though, right? Especially the first goal, the fact that all three central defenders are within maybe.
Except Clayton, because he fell down and then casually walked back.
Yeah, or I shouldn't say central defenders. There are three Crew players within a stride of Corey Burke. That's exactly the narrow kind of issues that they had. And obviously it was a turnover moment. It was a transition moment. So there's going to be a little bit of chaos there. But I thought Danny Higginbotham said it perfectly on the broadcast in that, like, because they're so tight, they were. I think he used the phrase at sixes and sevens, which is a fabulous, fabulous Britishism. And they just totally lose the Red Bulls player. I'm totally blanking on his name.
Yeah,
who scored?
Luquinhos.
And he, luckily, the ball falls to him. Unluckily, you know, if you're a Crew fan, but like that's a finish that even like a below average MLS player probably makes.
And. Look, I don't mean to just dump on Phil Quinton because, as I said, I do think that there were some good moments from him, and I think he's had positive moments this year. But you're asking a guy who was an MLS Next Pro player last year to be your starting center back. And the more I watch what they're doing, the more I'm confused why Jonathan Mensah, aside from his salary, didn't fit with this team. Mm-hmm. I do think the salary was a big part of it. You had a young guy in Philip Quinton that you were fairly confident in, and they were going to make another move and whatnot. But I don't. The way he got bodied off the ball on the first goal.
By a smaller guy.
Yeah. Well, Corey Burke's a bigger dude, but like he turns. He's under pressure, so he turns back towards his own goal, and because the Red Bulls press, there's no one to pass it to because they know how to do that. At some point, you just kick it away from your goal, clear it out of bounds, clear it, and then he falls down. You know, if that's me, I'm grabbing Corey Burke's leg and taking the yellow card, but like, I don't think that that's the type of player Philip Quinton is yet at this point in his career, but like, sometimes you just have to take that. I mean, Jason Russell Rowe did it in the second, later on in the game.
Yeah, when the players were warned, because they're cracking down on beating up on one guy, and you saw that. displayed in that game, he knew he was getting a yellow card.
Yeah, no, and that's why they call it a professional foul.
I like Quentin so far when he is just in a non-dangerous place and he has to take a guy on one-on-one, he looks confident when he does it. But when the house is on fire, he doesn't know where the fire hydrant is, and he looks confused. And we need him to not be confused there. And if he's not ready for that, it's what we talked about 4 weeks ago. We need to find a central defender somewhere who can step in and fill that role. We traded a really nice player away, and we've replaced him with a guy who's probably not ready for this.
Yeah. And I think Steven Marrera had some moments. He got caught inside a couple times on the ball, and you know, Nancy wants him to go forward. He said he wants it to use that ability, but he's got to be smart about it. And I thought at time, like, there's still very... I wrote this... There's a lot of growing pains that are happening with the team, and Quentin was the easiest example, but Marrera figuring out that right center back spot, both fullbacks playing at this level, everybody's still learning kind of the system, the front three figuring... There's a lot of growing pains that are happening. And again, unfortunately, you play a team like New York who can take advantage of those mistakes that you make when you're going through growing pains.
Well, if we're writing a play called The Columbus Crew versus the New York Red Bulls, Marrera is miscast. He's miscast. I don't want to see him play this position. It doesn't play to his strengths. He's being asked to do two different things. We want you to be Steven Marrera last year, you know, where you bomb forward and use your athleticism and with intention to put the ball in a dangerous place. But wait, in his mind, he's going, I have to get back.
Yeah, I'm also a center back.
I have to get back because I don't know what I'm going to find when I get there, you know?
I think that's the biggest challenge. You know, you mentioned that there are growing pains. The issue with those is they're all happening at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not just one quote-unquote adjustment period. It's like if you're looking at it in terms of backline, midfield, frontline, there are three adjustment periods going on simultaneously, all of which kind of have these individual specific factors as to why they're problematic, not just for themselves, but for the other two groups, right?
Yeah.
And so it's one of the reasons why I think you see flashes where it looks good. I think that, you know, especially like that first part of the Philly game, right, where it's like, wow, okay, there's something to this. But I think the issue with that I might have with it in terms of initially happening in a season, the one step forward, two step back process is going to be problematic in Major League Soccer.
Well, and I just think it's worth pointing out, this didn't just click with Montreal either. Mm-hmm. They had a year of Nancy after Thierry Henry left where I think, A, he was still figuring out the way he wanted to play, but they were not very good two seasons ago. Wow. And then last year, they got it going. And look, I don't think it needs to take that long for the Crew.
I hope not. I'm not getting any younger.
Yeah. Well, and the weird thing to me is you win the MLS Cup in 2020. They were very clear that they thought they were in a championship window. Why is this changed? Just because you changed manager? Well, you know, my understanding this offseason was they still felt this way. But you hire Nancy, and now it's, all right, let's play the kids, and we're not going to invest as much. You know, so I'm confused about why this has shifted. I mean, obviously, the difference is the coach. And Caleb is not a let's wait and build.
No.
But, like, why did the talent didn't change?
I think that's fascinating to me. Like when the starting lineup graphic comes out, and I don't recognize the team in some ways, especially the bench. Like the bench to me, like, is almost like bordering on like mystifying to me in moments, and I understand like. I'll sit here and defend a coach's right to shape a squad however he sees fit, right? That's the nature of professional soccer. But the idea that they're that it almost seems like it feel like that there's almost like a feeling like he came, when I say he, I'm talking about Wilfred Nancy, comes in and is like, whoa, this is more of a rebuild. And the fact that that was not necessarily the perception when the previous regime was here, while also the front office is the same.
Right.
Those two points don't meet for me. Yeah. Like, in fact, they can't. Like, it's not possible. And
I mean, some of it, I think, is, you know, he wants to play this different way with, so they're going to have to change personnel. But I mean, to your point, Russell Rowe is on the bench. Madranda, new player. Evan Bush is on the bench for the first time.
First time.
Well, except for the first game when he had to be on the bench. Valencia, who they just got. Keegan Hughes, new. Jake Morris was a crew two guy last year.
Jake Morris has been on the bench every single game this year, by the way.
And
Jake Morris, who didn't, I don't think he saw first team minutes.
No.
He was on the bench maybe two, three times.
Maybe.
All of last year.
Isaiah Parente.
Same.
Sean Zawatsky.
Same.
And Max Arfson.
At this point, Luis Diaz's status is still kind of a mystery, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he's been on the injury report. He wasn't, I think, or maybe he was questionable this week. I don't remember, but he wasn't out. But like, again, you are shifting to this new formation that doesn't fit Luis Diaz. It frankly doesn't fit Yao Yeboah, who I'm not sure what he has on Wilfred Nancy that keeps getting these.
I don't think he's going to be starting for long.
I thought that last week.
I feel, you know, the effort is there. I feel bad for him.
Here's the play. Like I thought this was the week because you're not playing a winger, but you're an attacking, you're on the right side. But then there was the play in the first half, or maybe it was early second half.
It was the second half when he tripped over his own feet. Yeah. And Celerion plays him through. Almost a one-on-one.
And he looked so uncomfortable running into the box.
That was a goal.
Yeah, I mean,
that was a goal.
Everything about it just looked bad as soon as he received the ball. And you know, you've got to get this guy's confidence up because obviously he was starting to play well right before he got hurt, but he hasn't done. It's like Matan, you know, it's got to come together. But I don't think playing him in multiple positions that aren't where he wants to play and where he can be his best help him at all.
Yeah.
And it's just a roster that doesn't make sense with what they want to do right now.
And I think that's why I'm a bit almost like gobsmacked as to the what feels a little bit like a full-on almost like a rebuild for a team that like is way better on paper than Wilfred Nancy's first Vancouver team, right?
Montreal team.
I'm sorry. And so like,
arguably better than last year's Montreal.
Probably should be better. And so like, I just don't quite understand. And so and some of this I think is a little bit of recency bias, at least on my part, in that like nobody looks good playing Red Bulls for the most part. So the game being ugly is not necessarily indicative of a larger problem. But we now have, I would say, two really good examples of it, and I can maybe even make the argument that there's a third of not really understanding the team that you're playing against in terms of whether or not you try and dictate the game or you regardless of who you're playing, or you take that into consideration and make these minor adjustments.
I was really surprised that he didn't change any of his tactics. He made subs, but he didn't change anything to match what the Red Bulls changed. I was like, because it seemed from his pregame comments that Chris Dorn played on the radio that he knew exactly what he is looking at in Red Bulls because it was happening to AT. And I'm just like,
manager,
right, exactly. But as a manager, if you already know that, then what are you doing that's different that's going to either give you an advantage or make them change how they play so you can play your style? And then when they made that change after they scored that first goal and they kind of sat back and played more counter, he didn't change anything at all other than the subs and maybe shuffling some guys around a little bit. But he didn't change any approach. He didn't change any tactic. I was really surprised.
Are you saying that in your mind there was no attempt to protect the lead when we had it?
Well, I mean, it seems like his idea of protecting the lead is to continue to bomb forward and possess ball and try to score, which yeah, that's fine. I don't want you to sit back at 1-0. But when the other team makes a change like that, that was very, very obvious. Why don't you as a coach have a change in your back pocket to adjust?
I would make the argument that he can't. You just read the bench.
Yeah.
Is anyone coming into the game and changing that game in a dynamic way?
Yeah.
Outside of Jason Russell Rowe, no.
What?
No. Like, the answer to that is, like, unequivocally no. Right. And that's why I don't think it makes a ton of sense to me with the – I don't know what Luis Diaz's status is. I don't understand what – Kevin Molino, I don't – quite understand.
I thought Kevin Molino was also on the list.
He was injured. He was questionable going into
that's
this.
But like questionable and then doesn't make the trip. Like, you know, but you know what
and
I mean?
And hasn't been used much at all.
Yeah. So like, I just it seems a bit mystifying to me. And so obviously it remains to be seen, right?
Sure.
But the thing that I think I'm starting to wonder if it's a genuinely problematic is that at some point you can't just punt on this season, especially with the window that you have with Cucho Hernandez and Lucas Zeller on here.
And Aiden Morris.
And Aiden. I would say
he's the only guy that's consistently playing great. Week in and week out.
He seems
to be matchup proof and tactic proof, and he just goes out and does his job.
And they're asking a little bit more of him in terms of contributing in the build-up in the middle third and the final third, which is probably where like he needs like to take the next step, right? Okay. Like in that specific part of his game. But like, are you, you know, if you know if. You know, insert Premier League team here or insert championship team here that gets promoted to the Premier League, like looks at Cucho Hernandez and says, we'll give you, you know, 8 figures for that guy. Like he's gone. Okay. Are you doing any better than him? The answer to that question is no. Lucas Alarcón is not a young man in soccer years. Like what's his long-term kind of plan? If both of those guys are gone, like the window in my mind is like now, like it's officially now because of those type of players that you have, and you got to make it happen. Like I don't get like the old adage of like you know you can't like you can't win a supporter shield and can't make the playoffs in March, but you can lose it. Like, is anything that we're seeing from this team right now going like, yeah, that's a contender?
Well, I mean, I do think, look, the first half against Philly, I thought was good. DC, obviously, they should beat a team like DC. And I thought there were positives in Toronto. So, like, yeah, well, I think we're being pretty negative.
I think there was positives in New York. Just
yeah, there were some. The thing that I am confused the most about is when they introduced Wilfred Nancy, Bailey from the Dispatch and I were talking to him, and I asked him about this formation because they weren't set up to play this way. And that became very apparent very quickly. And he told me that, you know, they went to that in Montreal because they had some injuries and it worked. And so they stuck with it. And he was like, but I'm not fully committed to it. You know, I'm not married to it. He didn't use that term, but something along those lines. But then that's really all they've done. And even in preseason, as coy as they were about things, you know, guys let it slip multiple times. They were working on 3 in the back, 5 in the, you know, whatever you want to call it. And I think at some point you have to play what works for your guys. And I know he says that the system is not necessarily, you know, the guys, you know, it doesn't matter all that much. And maybe we talk about it more, but okay, you're playing 3 center backs that include Steven Moreira playing out of position. You know, you're playing 2 attacking midfielders when you have wide players on the roster that aren't doing anything for you. So like, look, the guy knows more soccer than I do for sure, but at some point in my mind, the system has to fit the players, and it right now it is sometimes and isn't other times.
Do you think there is a merit to the thought or the theory that he's trying to see what he has in his pocket in this first half of the season until the summer window is open, and then they can make moves.
Maybe, but I mean, Tim Bezbachenko's been pretty frank about this team doesn't plan on spending a lot of money. Now, they were going to go get a center back. He admitted that, you know, they were, was it Turkey that they were looking in before the earthquake over there? So, like, whether they still do that or not, or whether Valencia is the guy that they got on loan from Colorado is going to be that fill-in guy, we'll see. But, you know, I don't expect a big summer spending spree.
Right.
Well, we've got a lot of money tied up in players that we all agree are great. And the cast around them, for the most part, is, you know, I mean, look at NBA teams. You have NBA clubs. They all have one or two guys who go, wow, that guy's great. And they're not very good because they don't have anybody around them. I think in other sports, we can tell when teams are tanking, Blue Jackets. In MLS, but and really in
somewhat
soccer.
Somewhat insufficiently, from my understanding.
Yeah. In MLS, they're trying to make soccer it look believable. In general, it's because of the way the game is structured around the world, you don't have an incentive to tank. You know, and there's, MLS...
There's even less of one in MLS in
right,
my mind.
Right, exactly. And so what are we doing here? I guess
your incentive
you trying
to not,
save money?
Your incentive to not tank around the world is so that you don't get relegated.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, and so it's not the same thing.
I mean, I think the idea here is that they want to be one of the Phillies, Dallas, to, you know, these teams that have built through their academy and have had success.
Well, we're going to talk about Atlanta in a few minutes, too. Yeah. They're very young, but they've got some great young talent.
But they are spending a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's
the difference. No one's spent more than Atlanta.
Okay.
Philly, if you're going to go the Philly process, it took Philly quite a long time to get to the supporter shield. You know, Jim Curtin's been there, what, 10 years? And within the last four is when they've really started to find success?
Well, we've had way more lifetimes than most other clubs in this league. And when MLS started, there wasn't an academy system. There wasn't just... It was a completely... It's like we're talking about a different sport almost.
I think that's a fabulous way of putting it. That for a league that hasn't really been around all that long relative to other professional leagues, it does seem like there's a bunch of different eras.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And how starkly different those eras are, even though we're talking about 27 years here.
Here's an exercise I did over the weekend with somebody who also is an MLS person. We tried to remember the 10 original MLS teams, and we got like 7 of them, and then we just couldn't. I mean, I should know that. I had posters on my wall with all the teams, but it was, it's just because there's been so many, to your point, Brent.
Yeah. Here's what I'll say about the Red Bulls to put a bow on, at least from my perspective, is that in an attacking sense, can you answer the yes or no question? Did you create enough chances to win or draw the game? Did you create enough chances to draw the game? I would say probably yes, maybe yes. Did you create enough to win the game? Absolutely not. Defensively, did you prevent your opponent from creating enough chances for them to for you to draw the game? No. And if the answer to that question is no, the answer to the next one is obviously no. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a problem.
One more thing about the game. Cucho was out. Knee injury, probably not serious.
Yeah, so we found this out right before lineups came out.
I know, wait, what?
Yeah, he felt some pain in his knee at the end of practice Friday. It doesn't sound serious. They decided not to risk having him travel with the team and just let him rest it and whatnot. We haven't talked with anyone yet this week. We're recording this Monday night.
Yeah.
So we'll certainly have more info, but it's not, you don't want to hear that from your designated player. I mean, you know, you hope it's minor and then it goes on and nothing else comes from it, but it's not overly positive.
Well, what were we noting the last few weeks is that Cucho spends a lot of his time this year playing away from the goal in non-dangerous positions, and I felt like Lucas took his place on Saturday. He was playing the false nine. He's not comfortable doing that, and he was not in dangerous places, in my opinion, for a lot of the game. Now, you guys are smarter about this stuff than I am. tell me what I'm seeing here. Am I right? Am I wrong?
Yeah, I mean, it looked to me, and I wrote this today, that there was some deja vu to last year for this game. Yeah. One, you had Lucas often trying to do everything by himself, mm-hmm. and sometimes last year he played that false nine. And you also had a team that gave up a lead in the second half and gave up a late goal, which was the
2021 and 2022 called. They would like their defense right. back.
And so, like, if you don't... there needs to be a better answer when Cucho isn't on the field. And again, I don't think he's had the best start to the season, and the numbers obviously reflect that in terms of what he can do for this team. But, he, you know, Lucas was triple teamed at times.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen if Cucho's on the field.
They knew what to do, right? They played against Lucas when he didn't have Cucho around. They knew what to do.
Yeah, I do think, you know, the game is so marginal in terms of outcomes being successful or failing,
sure.
right? And that, like, Cucho's hit the post, I think, twice and had a basically point-blank header that if it's a, you know, 6 inches either side of the goalkeeper, he's off and running in that regard. And I think he's a very he's a type of goal scorer that probably feeds off of momentum. So, like, peaks and valleys, right? Comes in bunches. And so I think, like, if things are just slightly a little bit different, we're probably thinking about his start in a very different way.
Absolutely.
But, you know, none of that matters in terms of the actual results, right?
But to
answer your question, I don't think you're crazy. In fact, I actually think you're right about Lucas in terms of the false nine and assuming the striker role when he is not a striker, nor does he have, in my mind, the physical abilities to be a number nine. And I'm not talking about, like, technical ability. I'm talking about the running. That's a problem. And the fact that you trust Jason Russell Rowe enough to come off the bench, but you don't trust him enough to start a game when he absolutely should have started. Mm-hmm. That doesn't really make much sense to me.
I have to think, and this is something I'd like to talk to Nancy about, but I have to think that was, okay, we can possess the ball better with Zellerayan as that guy, as opposed to a young kid. But then you look at the back line and he trusts those guys. So
I guess, you know what I'm saying? Like, where, like, some of the messaging in it, on the back line, the same messaging that you're using to kind of support your reasoning for the back line, you're not using for other positions. That doesn't really make a lot of sense to me either.
I also think that the false nine, like, I haven't seen the crew. Now, this is the first time we've seen it under Nancy, but under Caleb and a lot of MLS teams that have tried this, they don't really do it right. Like, the whole idea, you can't just vacate that space, right? Like, there's got to still be somebody making runs, and it happened a couple times when Lucas got wide, but, like, it's not an easy way to play. I mean, Spain made it a thing during that run of winning a lot. But, like, you can't it's not just putting a 10 or a midfielder up there and saying, okay, you just kind of do your thing, but do it as a forward. And I feel like teams that don't know how to do it, when they run it, it comes off really bad.
Yeah.
And the crew have not figured out how to do it.
This isn't my quote or statement, but, like, over the last, like, 20 years, the number one indicator of attacking success is the number of touches you have in that zone 14. We're talking about that area at the top of the 18 in the middle of the field. If you're not getting the ball there, you're not scoring. That's, like, that's an unequivocal fact. That's just how it works. And if you're vacating that space, like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, if you want this to become more of a downer.
wait, real quick. I think we should touch on the fact that Matan actually put the ball in the back of the net.
Oh, you're right. And I was so excited for him.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, of all the ways for him to score his first MLS goal, Carlos Coronel makes the unforgivable sin, commits the unforgivable sin of being a goalie who comes out of his box and does not get the ball. I was watching the game with my wife, and I go, it's pretty simple. this much I know. If you're going to do that, you got to get the ball or kill the guy who's going to score. There's no in between. And it was a very strange play.
And it probably should be an own goal, by the way.
It did. Oh,
yeah.
Did they change it?
I don't think they did, but it definitely took a
the ball's going wide.
Difference.
The ball, the shot is going wide. It goes off Cornell and goes in.
Yeah. I did think about it.
Which, by the way, if anybody deserves, in terms of like a chance in front of goal, actually finally going his way, it's Matan. Like a little bit of luck, we'll take it, right? And it, you know, there's no dubious goal panel, right? In American
it's
soccer,
it's hard to score.
Thank
goals.
God.
Yeah.
So
it's hard.
Yeah. To me, he's the personification of resiliency with this team right now, and where he was, you know, last year under Caleb Porter, and now what he's doing with the new regime. It's fabulous to see. Happy to see him off the mark. I hope he gets like another like 10 or 11 this year.
Well, that's what you hope, right? Is that, look, this goal happened however it happened, but that now when the chances like what happened against Toronto come his way, the confidence is there. He puts the ball in the back of that. You know, he doesn't need to score 10, 15 goals. That's not what he's out there to. I mean, that'd be great if he did. But that when those chances that he has had that he hasn't been able to score come, he's more confident in those situations.
If we were doing like an ESPN top 10 plays in terms of weird Columbus Crew goals all time, that was pretty weird when you think about it.
Yeah, it's one of the things that we always talked about when we were doing the TV broadcast was how few goals the Crew scored under Caleb Porter that were essentially direct off of an opponent mistake. Like, it didn't feel like the Caleb Porter's teams put opponents in like super high pressure situations and then like kind of like got like a garbage one off of that. Eric Hurtado scored one last season.
Yeah.
I remember, I think it was Charlotte, that essentially like the keeper kind of loses track of where he is and takes a really bad touch, and Hurtado's just right there and sweeps it into a wide open net.
That was the one off Giassi's butt.
Yeah.
But other than that,
And so like, I do think that like this team and club at large is probably due for the pendulum to swing the other way a little bit. And so the fact that you're at the very least giving an opponent an opportunity to make a mistake, that's a positive. That's a net positive for me. And I wish they would have maybe done that more. In this
direct play,
but it's also kind of proving the point of what we talked about and touched on earlier, in that Red Bulls, in my mind, it's a no lose situation if you're playing New York Red Bulls in terms of playing direct. They don't want the ball in the first place. If you're kicking it to their goalkeeper, it's not necessarily a turnover because they're not trying to build through that anyway. And if you do happen to pick off a couple chances by doing that, you're also forcing them backward, which alleviates your biggest and most pressing issue, which is the fact that they're down your throat the entire game. And so that you use the word naivete. I would go so far as use the word arrogant in terms of like, well, we're just going to pass our way through you. We're going to slice and dice you like nobody else in MLS has done, even though there's a decade of examples as to how Red Bull makes that impossible with like 150 different players over the course of those 10 years.
There was a time when Andrew Erickson was still working for the Dispatch and Greg was still the coach. When we go into that used to be the last 15 minutes of training, and that was open. You could take pictures, you could talk to guys, you could video, you could tweet whatever you wanted. It was all open. And they were playing Red Bull, and they had Jonathan Mensah literally standing in his box or around the box, just booting the ball to an assistant coach in different play. You know, they were just practicing clearing it to certain areas of the field. And Andrew took a video of it, and Greg came over and was like, hey, please don't tweet that. Like, I know this is open, but like, and it was really the first time, you know, it was pretty early on. It was really the first time they just said, screw it, and just kicked the ball. And they, you know, they had a plan of where they wanted it, and that was the whole point. He didn't want that out there. But like, to your point, you just have to sometimes not be arrogant. And Greg Greg was married to that system.
Yeah.
And against Red Bull, and it worked. Look, they beat him in the playoffs. I mean, like, that's, you know, that's well, what I think we've hit on it a lot.
Everybody wants to play the way that we played out of the back. Everybody wants to do that now. And to, I guess, to wrap this up.
Everybody but Philadelphia, by
yeah.
the way.
You know?
Who don't. They don't.
Yeah.
And look, has that, yeah. been, has that not been successful?
Yeah.
But in the great words of Kenny Rogers, you got to know when to hold them. Know when to hold them. And he did not do
God
either.
Bless you. God bless you, Sam. That is true. All right. So before we can talk about Atlanta, we need to talk about who's going to be here and who's not going to be here, because the blasted international window is here for a bunch of pointless friendlies. This is a bad time for this, but it's a bad time for Atlanta too, because they're going to be missing a lot of guys, huh, Murph?
Yes. So the Crew will be without Zelarayan, Milos, and Aloy Room, which three pretty significant guys, especially if Cucho can't play.
Well, I would say Milos gone is the biggest of the three.
That's you hope that Josh Williams is available. He hasn't. He's been on the injury report the last couple weeks. Which
Valencia was on the bench.
He was on the bench, but you know, I don't know how. We'll see what he can do. But yeah, that's certainly a big one as well. Atlanta is down seven players now. Some of those guys aren't as big of a deal. Miles Robinson, big deal. Thiago Almeida, big deal.
Yeah.
If you just want to go back and watch what he did last week, you'll understand that.
Watch the 7-minute MLS highlight reel of that game, and it will frighten you.
Ronald Hernandez, who's a defender, he hasn't played yet this year. I'm going to get this wrong. Georgios Giokoumakis?
The Greek guy.
I love it.
He's
love
played it. Three times. He's a forward, but he's
scored
only
a goal
made
the other night one from Celtic?
Yes, he did score a goal. Matchup Chol, I believe. Mm-hmm. He hasn't played yet this year, forward.
Really?
Luis Abram, who is a defender. He's played twice, but both off the bench. And, Crew fans may know this guy, Derek Etienne Jr., who has only played 102 minutes, but has two assists for Atlanta.
Yeah.
So, really, I think, I mean, both teams are going to be without two or three key players in this game. And, look, at some point, MLS will figure out how to do this international window, but you know, maybe if you didn't just add a tournament for no reason in the middle of your summer, you could take international windows off and do it like the rest of the world does. But yeah. You know,
we got to play through it. And one guy that was not on that list, he's all of 18 years old. He joined Atlanta's academy when he was 11. Caleb Wiley. He's a nice player, right?
Yes. And on top, confidence is such a weird thing in the world of sports, and how many kind of like ills and issues confidence just can erase. And he seems to be about as, you know, flying high as you possibly can. And with young players, sometimes there's a really great quote from a PGA Tour golfer. It's probably about, I don't know, maybe like 6-7 years ago. Two-time major champion Padraig Harrington was talking about some of the younger guys on the PGA Tour who were just taking the golf world by storm. And they were like, oh, you know, these guys are going to make $100 million and win all these tournaments and break all these records. And he was like, well, just you wait. Because they don't have the scars that the rest of us have. And it was a very prescient comment because those guys have pretty much entirely cooled off after a couple of issues that they've had, right? And so I think the glory of youth is sometimes the lack of hindsight and wisdom, right? And so I think Caleb Wiley is definitely experiencing that. He's just dangerous and always active, always dynamic. And in Atlanta, with some of the fluidity that they're doing, that's exactly what you want. And that kind of that point person. And then when you have a guy in Thiago Almeida, who I think is going to break the MLS transfer fee record at some point here in the relatively near future, when that guy keeps doing what he's doing, everybody is going to play better. So the fact that the Crew are missing him, it's a little bit disappointing because we don't get a chance to watch him. But it's a major, major pro, you know, kind of in the crew column.
Yeah, they obviously we talked about as you mentioned. I watched the highlights of Wiley's goal. It was the fact that he's a defender and just bombed right through the middle of everyone and scored that goal. Go back and look for it. You know, I think to a certain extent they're built for their home stadium, the artificial turf. They play fast. They switch the ball a lot. And Portland just looked completely helpless against them. It was only one game, and they're going to be missing some guys. But, I mean, they play a style that I don't think we've displayed any sort of ability to defend, and that scares me.
Well, and you're going to be without Milos.
Yeah.
So you need an organizer among the back line. If Josh isn't ready to go, and Josh hasn't played in the system and didn't play a lot in the preseason.
Yeah.
So, you know, that'll be an interesting decision there on how you handle it. Because I don't think they go away from the formation. It would surprise me. Maybe you do if you just don't have enough center backs, I guess. But you know, handling that Atlanta attack, when, like you said, when they come fast and furious, will be crucial. You know, they've scored what? They've scored 11 goals and they've given up 3. So, you know, there's... Now that's with Almeida, but...
They're really young, too.
I should mention that as of right now, the weather forecast is 54 and 60% chance of rain.
Well,
and if you've
yeah.
if you know the history of Columbus Crew, yeah. Atlanta United, yeah. and rain,
yeah.
Expect a typhoon and major flooding.
The good news is that that field drains unlike the old field, so it
I'll
should
believe
be,
it when I see it. It might be a good test for it.
It rained pretty hard for the Atlanta game last year, and they yeah. were able to play fine.
Yeah, I. Might we see Miguel Berry, too? He started 2 games, played in all 4.
Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they're such a fascinating team in terms of the way that they attack and how kind of relatively simple it is, but the counter-pressing is not, and the triggers that they use for the counter-pressing is very specific, and it's very opponent specific. And you want to talk about like the game tape that you as a Crew fan want to see an Atlanta team like kind of licking their chops with Red Bulls and some of the issues that the Crew team had, and just, you know, fairly normal possession. Like Atlanta's going to be very much kind of doing the Red Bull blueprint at times. And I think that could be, they obviously won't be as dynamic with some of the absences, but like there are still some guys that are pretty darn good that won't be away on international duty.
But can they hold that press, that high press for the entire game?
I would say, yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't think the fitness is quite big. It's not like the Red Bulls in terms of the entire point of everything they do is based off of essentially trying to maintain the same level of fitness for like 85 minutes. But I think like probably can't answer that question with a yes. But the defense is, that's the other side of this, is that with Atlanta, I think in years past, some of the defense has been somewhat suspect and somewhat susceptible to, you know, some issues and turnovers and both in a couple different ways. Not if you look at the goals that the Crew scored when they were in Atlanta in May last year. Jonathan Mensah corner kick, basically unmarked. Perhaps not a coincidence, by the way, that it was Pedro Santos playing that corner. And then a kind of a prayer long ball outlet that Hurtado kind of slices and dices Sosa, I forget his first name, and then finishes to the far post. They gave up goals like that all season long.
Well, they didn't have Miles Robbins.
Yeah, and so...
Who they won't have this week, but he has been...
Yeah, so, but the fact that the defense seems to be maybe a little bit solidified is also a concerning thing for this Crew team.
Yeah. Well, if you want to see what we're talking about, just look at the highlight package on YouTube of the last game against Portland. I was really impressed, especially the goal where they switched it three times and then scored. Like, long switches. The point of attack, and Portland was completely lost. And I look at the way we've been defending sometimes, and we look completely lost.
It's funny with Atlanta because they've either been really good or just bad. And, like, this clearly early on, I'm talking about in their history, not the season. They've been very good this season. Like, it looks like this is another, well, this team may run away with Eastern Conference type of team, MLS Cup favorites type of team from a few years ago, which, you know, again, early days in this league, but this is a dangerous side coming to Columbus.
Yeah, no question. This is national TV too, right? Are we the Fox game? I think we are.
That's a good question.
I have no idea.
Look at it. Yeah.
The other thing,
go ahead.
The other thing too is, like, I think they're also a good example of, like, you know, what I mentioned earlier in terms of the margins being thin between success and failure, because they're essentially three Thiago Almeida bangers away from not actually having a great start to the season. But the fact that those have gone in, and it's like, wow,
all right,
look at these guys go.
That's like when Lucas was scoring, you know, all those goals from outside the box early, the one, you know. They still count same. Well, this game is on Apple TV. It is not the Fox.
Oh, okay. Portland scored the first goal of the game.
Portland
is on Fox. Oh, well, good for America. Portland had a banger of a goal waved off by offsides. They had the first goal of the game. It was, go back and look at that. It was impressive. It didn't count, but it was impressive. So maybe that changed the game for them. I don't know. As sad as I am to say this, last week I believe I nailed the pick right on. 2-1. Mm.
I believe you are correct.
There we go.
Nice.
A hollow victory.
You did.
Yeah.
2-1. You said 2-1 crew. You did say Cucho would score. So, Sam, you said 2-0
crew. I didn't
know
he was going to play.
I said 1-1. Brett, you said 1-1. Also Cucho scoring. Bart said 2-1 crew. So, good on you, Brian.
All right. Well, it doesn't feel great. So let's see. I believe we got a pick from Bart, who it turns out could not be with us here tonight. What did he say?
Bart said 2-1 to the crew. I don't know if I need to explain that. He said another for Matan, and he said maybe Marrera. It's provocative. It gets the people going.
All right. Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. Sam?
2-1 Atlanta.
2-1 Atlanta. Brett?
I think they're, from what I've seen so far through four games now, that I think this team seems to me to be a lot more comfortable at home. Part of that might just be because of DC, I think, might just be bad. But also, I do think there's something to this is something that we touched on in during the broadcast years. We really tried to hammer home that, like, when teams came into Crew Stadium, they knew they were in for it in some form or fashion. It was going to be a challenge. Just the atmosphere, everything about it. It was not an easy place to play, for the most part. Lower.com Field is definitely not been that since it's opened. In fact, it's been relatively friendly for opponents, in its you know, somewhat short history. And so it's essential for the Columbus Crew to turn it into a challenging place to play. I think there are some steps made towards that at times last year, but probably not in a big picture sense. I think something's changing. I don't know. I can't exactly put my finger on it as to why.
It's because guys are running through walls before
the
game, right?
You know, we're setting off fireworks and all types of pyrotechnics. But no, I think it's an intangible thing, but I think something's changed a little bit in the mindset. So I like this team at home. I don't think they keep Atlanta off the score sheet. But I do think there's goals to be had. So let's go 2-1, Columbus Crew victorious. in a hopefully somewhat dry evening in Lower.com Field.
Yes, please.
You Murph. Said you don't think DC is very good. They are tied with the Crew in the standings right now. Yeah. So,
well,
where is that?
What position is that?
11 and 12?
Yeah, exactly.
I was say, second from the bottom.
Well, I'm just saying, misery, like, what does that say about the Crew?
Misery loves company.
I don't feel good about this game. I don't know. I don't like the guys that are missing. I'll be very interested to see who starts in goal. With Evan Bush making the bench for the first, well, the second time, but the first time when they had other options last week. Is that a sign that you're going to go with him over Patrick Schulte, which is who went week one? But the backline really concerns me.
Yeah.
I worry that they go with Philip Quinton in the middle, and I think that will be a mistake against Atlanta. I'm going to say 2-1 Atlanta. I may change my pick when we do this written version if it turns out that Cucho is 100% and fine and ready to go. But I don't know. If you're missing those three guys and maybe Cucho isn't 100%, I don't feel great about it.
Well, I'm going to be the real Eeyore here because I see no upside in this matchup. I think we lose 3-0. The guys we're missing, the great start Atlanta's off to, I realize they're going to be missing some guys. We look completely lost and not ready to play a team like this. So, yeah, 3-0, Atlanta.
Are you sad yet?
I should have made my pick first.
This has been a super positive and upbeat podcast.
You know, I had high hopes, and I just, after that game on Saturday, I was like,
It looked really bad.
Yeah.
It looked really bad. And there is some solace to be taken in the fact that nobody looks good against Red Bulls. Even when you win, no one really looks that good.
All right. But I hope I'm wrong.
But that was bad and a pretty emphatic defeat. Mm-hmm. And those are not two things you want to see happen at the same time.
It wasn't, if someone told you, well, they lost 2-1, they go, oh, well, that's not too bad. But you have to, in this game,
it's how it happened.
You have to watch the match. Otherwise, you don't know. Right. In this sport, you have to watch it. You have to watch where, you know, oh, well, we were unlucky. Oh, okay, I could see that. We weren't unlucky. We were just bad. And we should have lost by more. So prove me wrong, Columbus Crew. Prove me wrong. Don't make me be disappointed in you next week. All right. That does it from here. Sorry to be such a downer. Thank you, guys. Brett and Murph and Sam. Bart, thanks for filing your pick. And I hope you're right and I'm wrong. I'm Brian. Listen to my radio station, CD92.9. Like and subscribe, even with my downer pick. And thanks to Saucy Brew Works. We'll see you next week here from Saucy on the Massive Report.